April 8, 2011 is the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show, but I ain't in Pedro. In fact, I'm about 1,100 miles north in a town called Seattle. I'm on tour. Oh, I should tell you what we just heard. John Coltrane doing The Damn Don't Cry. And then we heard Stay by Sawako. I'm on a little tour here. First time playing at the Edward and Georgie in 18 years. And for 7 of the gigs, we're doing 13 altogether, but 7 of the gigs, we get to share stage with Terra Metals. And they're here right in this, well, actually, this is a Steve and Sandy pad that they've been kind enough. It's an Easter, and we ain't got a gig, which is trippy for a tour for me, but it's the way it worked out. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
Howdy.
Hi.
Okay. We got to talk to the guitar man. God, when was that, Nick?
A couple months ago.
Yeah, and via the Skypeage. And about your journey through music. And we got two of your cohorts. Comrades. Nakama. Tomodachi. And I would like to talk about their music. Mr. Nate on the bass.
Right.
What was the first music you ever heard in your life?
Beatles.
How old?
I can't even remember how old I was. In fact...
Younger than 21?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was a little kid.
You remember a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I was younger.
Somebody play it for you?
Yeah, Dad was in the Beatles. Was into the Beatles, not in the Beatles. Yeah, Dad was into the Beatles. And, my parents divorced shortly after I was born. So I don't ever have memories of them being together, but my dad would make us, my older brother and I would dub us, like, Beatles tapes, and make...
Put music on a cassette.
Yeah, and give them to us, and we'd play them on, you know, little...
So this is first music you hear?
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't really buy them, it's kind of foisted on.
Yeah, exactly.
Were you a Beatles fan?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Help was my, like, first favorite song, I guess, ever, was Help.
What about the connection between listening and playing? When did that come?
That came a bit later.
Okay, so in between you started buying records?
Yeah, so...
Not just relying on Dad as the fountain of all music.
Right, exactly. I think I remember my older brother, my older brother and I grew up... Where we lived was, like, up in the sticks in Grass Valley, so there wasn't anything around.
Up in the valley or down in the valley?
Up.
Okay.
I know, it doesn't sound right, but...
No, it's all right.
Yeah.
You know that Orson Welles thing? You know, spring peas in the winters. Who writes this shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm fucking you up.
Yeah, no, no, it's cool. So
you guys lived up in the valley.
Right.
And this had something to do with... Music.
Right, where I'm getting to is there wasn't, it was the sticks, there wasn't like any...
It's hard to get music.
Yeah, there was no cultural, like...
No record stores.
Yeah, exactly. So, my older brother had like my cousin who lived down in Sacramento with my dad, buy him a cassette single of Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music Factory. And I remember, I didn't even know what it was, but I was just like...
I remember that.
I wanted something, too. Like, I wanted them to go...
Yeah.
Yeah. The Weather Girls or somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
So, and I remember feeling like it was, like, some kind of thing that I wasn't included on, like, well, what...
Cassette single. What was on the other side?
Probably, like...
A remix of it.
Remix, yeah, yeah. Probably. Okay. The club
name. It was, and the cassette singles
were just that's a trip.
They were in little paper sleeves, you know.
Okay.
So yeah, I remember feeling like kind of unincluded.
But you didn't pick it; it was given to you.
No, that was his. Yeah. Like he got that. I remember sitting there being like, "How come nobody told me that we could get music?" You know.
Oh. Okay.
Like, what if I wanted to get something?
So, yeah, I understand that.
And. And so from there it was...
Oh, no, Weather Girls is it's Raining Men.
Yeah.
I'm a slow learner.
So
now you're on the path. You're on the path. Right, you got a mission. You want to...
Right. The concept of...
How old are you at this point?
Oh, man. Probably like 5 or 6.
Oh, so you ain't even in school. Yeah, okay. Kindergarten or 6.
Yeah. Maybe. Okay, maybe like... Yeah. Yeah, 5 or 6. Because I remember by the time I was in 3rd grade, which would be about 8 years old, that's when I was... Because we're still up in the sticks.
Yeah.
How I got a hold of music was asking other people
in the school
to dub tapes over for me. So about that age was 3rd and 4th grade, which would be 8 and 9 years old. Guns N' Roses.
Okay.
Had to get a hold of the Guns N' Roses. Wait, tapes. This would be
what aroused you.
What? Yeah, I can't even think of what did arouse me to it. Before then, what was popular in music was, you know, like Michael Jackson. So much of what...
Oh, maybe stuff coming on the TV.
Yeah, so much of what you get, or what your, you know, your musical background comes from. And I've even tied this into our band now, and what people get into is your options are limited.
Yeah.
In a lot of places, your options are limited. So there was nothing really past, like... the ultra, ultra popular music.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing past Michael Jackson and, like, Madonna. And
remember, I saw Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
that's
first
right
group.
Around the time. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, most people come from Mersch.
Yeah.
Because you're not in a place where you can use choice yet.
Right, right.
You can't even discern. You don't even know there are things to discern from.
Right. And at this point, I was never thinking, like, oh, I'm going to play music. I just like music. I wanted to get my hands on music. And, you know, like I always was like burning through Walkman, you know, always going through my...
These were little cassette players.
Yeah.
The headphones.
Yeah. And at some point I got my first like real tape I got for Christmas was an MC Hammer tape. And I like played that thing until it got eaten up, you know.
So that's this one you buy.
Yeah, or I asked for it.
Or
yeah.
So you had somebody tape for you.
Yeah.
I had that tape, too.
Yeah. And,
So when does it connect towards...
It starts to connect...
You
want to
make... You want to do it yourself.
I think at this point, I'm noticing that I'm like the kid in school that's into music. You know what I mean? The other kids aren't as obsessed with it, with having the MC Hammer tape, trying to get... The Guns N' Roses.
Listening over and over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah, no, I'm the person on the bus that has, like, my tapes and my Walkman and, like, listens to it and stuff. I was always into... I was into, like, Little League, like, playing baseball.
Yeah.
Like, that was...
I had to do that,
from no point... Yeah, there was never any point where I had, like, an idea where I... Like, someday I'm going to do a... I'm going to have, like, a realistic career. It was always, like... Oh, maybe I'll be, like, a professional baseball player or something. Like, you know. And a lot of this stuff came from my dad. It trickled from my dad to my older brother, to me.
Did your pop play? Did your older brother play?
My dad had, like, a high school band, and, you know, he was really into the Beatles and Paul Revere and the Raiders and, like, stuff like that. And,
you do guitar?
Yeah, he played guitar. And, but he was never, you know...
So is there a guitar around the house?
Well, down at his house, yeah, he had...
You're with your mom.
Yeah. Okay. But we would go visit, you know, on the weekends. We'd go down and stay at his place.
And there's this guitar. So would you pick it up?
I didn't pick it up. My older brother was playing guitar. And I remember my dad had a bass because he had a roommate that died. And so he got the roommate's bass. It was a realistic brand, Radio Shack realistic bass.
Wow.
And it was the, you know, it was the Paul McCartney, like, double cut.
Like a Hofner.
Yeah, Hofner bass. And so he had an electric guitar, an acoustic guitar, and this is all, like, not good, you know, it's, like, all low-quality stuff. He had an electric guitar, an acoustic guitar, and a bass. And my brother started taking interest in playing guitar, and so, well, I didn't want to do the same thing as him, like, you know. So I took the bass.
How old?
We're probably about 11 or 12 years old.
Okay. So, what do you do with the bass? Do you try to copy songs off records?
You know, I never really got too much into that, which I think has kind of caused a deficiency in my playing.
Oh, man, you're a great bass player.
But, well, a lot of times, like, when I'm, like, Nick will come up with a demo of something, and he'll send it, and even then I think, like, man, if I just would have, like, figured out what was going on a lot more in these songs, I would probably know exactly where it's going instead of, a lot of times, I'm naturally drawn to the fifth of what he's playing, thinking the fifth is the root note of what he's playing. You know?
It's harmony.
Yeah.
So you're thinking music. I'm just talking about, as a way of learning,
yeah,
trying to copy off a record.
Yeah.
This was never in your beginning.
Right, because at this point...
I like that idea.
Yeah.
See, I've always...
No, I've always felt
fouled. Me and DJ both felt fouled.
Uh-huh.
By, like, we were tainted by copying other people's music. What was our voice? If we're like...
Well, because at this point...
I don't know if it was totally true, because other people would say, no, you were just building up rudiments to go and find your own voice with. But we, especially when punk first started, this was one of the liberating things we saw of this scene, because we were watching cats. We knew they would just learn it. You could tell by them playing. And we there's a sense of purity that we thought we would never have because we fouled ourselves with record copying.
Well, yeah. The other thing why I never kind of developed that way was because at this point, the music I was getting to, especially in sixth grade, was like, that's when Nirvana, like, hit. Alternative music, you know what I mean? Oh, Nirvana led to all this alternative stuff. So there was Nirvana, which led to Chili Peppers. I couldn't fucking figure out any of that Flea shit. You know what I mean? Like, being, whatever, 12 years old and putting on that Flea stuff, it was just like, I'm never going to be able to do this, so I'm not even going to try. Oh, these two notes, dude, where he, like, will ride this two-note thing, I can do that. So there were, like, bits and pieces that I could pick up. Which also, you know, like, Red Hot Chili Peppers Flea led to Primus and Les Claypool, which is even more just like...
Both those guys really turned on a lot of people to bass.
What is happening with this? I can never do this, but I like it, you know?
Did you ever have this problem? Just hearing what the bass was on the record.
Of course.
I had this huge problem.
Sometimes you can't tell if it's bass or if it's drums.
I could hear Ed Whistle in The Who. I could hear Jack Bruce in Cream. I could hear Larry Graham in Sly.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the brothers, with R&B, I could hear the bass.
Yeah.
But, man, like Creedence, you know, when I met D. Boone, that's all he knew.
Uh-huh.
And so then we got these six Creedence records, and I couldn't fucking hear the bass.
Yeah.
Now I can hear it now.
Yeah.
No, some of it's... there's some sophisticated shit in there, but it's just the way it was recorded or the way that is. The riffs, those other guys were kind of... like a Les or a Flea guy.
Yeah.
They were pronounced... And so I could kind of hear that. It was difficult for me.
Yeah.
So what'd you do then? You got the bass and you started writing right away?
I would just, I would come up with, you know, and again, I had no, like, there's never been any theory. Also, in sixth grade, I joined high school, or not high school, the junior high band. And I played...
They let you play bass in the band?
No, I played percussion. I was in the percussion section. Because, like, to me, it was like, oh, I want to be part of this musical thing, but I can't, like, really grasp reading music or, like, learning an instrument like the saxophone or something. My older brother had played trumpet, and I just remember, like, it just didn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
It was more to just associate myself with music. And take what I thought was the easiest thing, you know.
Okay.
You don't have to worry about playing different notes when you play percussion, right? You just have to learn about rhythms. And I have kind of forgot where I was going with that. But
no, with the bass. What I'm saying is, you're not. When I started with the thing, okay, yeah, a lot of it's to be with D. Boone. But then what we did with it was try to copy these songs. For hours. I remember American Woman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for 4 hours. Dun, 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 dun. I mean, every day after school, there's one lick.
Yeah.
For hours. And then his first solo he ever learned. And like, over and over, the same. And it was just like, wow, we did it. You know, so let's keep doing it. You know, the same fucking thing. And then we try another tune and get that motherfucker. And, of course, learn it all wrong and shit. Slowly find the parts. No, this kind of sounds more like it. So what you're doing,
You're not listening to other people's things. You're coming up with your own jams. Are you recording these to cassette?
Here's also the other thing, though, is kind of at this point, I don't think I'm, like, taking it seriously as anything I want to do. I'm just, like, kind of like, yeah, I've got my dad's bass, and I'm that guy that likes music. You know, it's not...
Do you carry it around at school?
No, because there wasn't really any reason to take it to school.
No, just like the guy.
I had friends' house, you know, that so you bring they, it they were getting the same thing. Like, so I take it over to
friends' house
on the weekend, and you know what I mean.
I'm just wondering how you worked with it.
Well, this is, I guess, what I'm getting at this point it was still just like a weird quirk being the guy that had the bass, you know. But
bass was weird to me. You know, the first couple of years I played a guitar with four strings. We didn't know what a bass was.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had bigger strings.
Yeah.
It blew my mind. We thought they had thinner necks.
Uh-huh.
So only four fit on, like a tenor guitar.
Well, yeah. That was part of too of why I picked the bass too, because I didn't really know the difference or how to differentiate in the beginning. Well, I was like, there's less strings on that. That's probably easier.
Okay.
So.
Okay. D. Boone's mom put me on bass. I didn't even pick it.
Yeah.
But when I saw how big the strings were when I was 16, it was like, God damn, no wonder there's only four.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Marina Rock, we were so far away, I couldn't...
Yeah.
Okay, so...
So, yeah,
this thing would sit in the corner, you come home after school and...
Yeah, every once in a while, just get on it. But for me, it was more being about able to say that, yeah, I have one. Or, yeah, exactly.
Did you have an aunt?
That was another interesting thing was I remember I had a very like defeatist attitude about it pretty early on because you couldn't hear it. And I think I
the Portland gig. Man, was that a guy? Yeah.
So I remember like I'd pick it up and pluck around on it, and then you know my mom and my stepdad would be like, oh, why aren't you are you gonna play it? And I'd be like, oh, I can't hear it. So one morning I remember. God, it was a weekend morning, and it was like 7 o'clock in the morning, and my stepdad's one of those guys that's like up at the crack of dawn, like doing tons of stuff. He is, you know, he has a shop and a garage, and he's always busy doing stuff and that, and I guess he'd gotten up this morning, and his first task was going to solve the problem of, I can't plug in and hear it.
He's going to build you an amp?
So he built me a little setup, yeah, and like I woke up to him like, you know, he's not a musical person at all, but just woke up to him, like, kind of bashing around on it, and that was where I could start to be like, oh, okay, I can, like, mess around on this.
I can hear it. Yeah.
Can
we hear some music?
Yeah.
Okay.
Set the water so keep your mouth. You want to take it up, but you just don't know.
One, two, three.
So,
oh, I should tell you what we played. We're getting back to Nathan's musical journey. But I should tell you, we heard a demo from Terry Genderbender called Demon in Your Eye. She's working on a new album. Told me. And then I Was Silenced by Bob Pollard. He's got a new solo album. Tune des Rain by Dirty Beaches. Invenzioni Due by Neil. This is a guitar player you got to see, man. His cat named Manlio from a town by Roma called Tergina. No strap. Yeah, sometimes he uses a chair, puts one leg up there, and hoists it up on his shoulder.
Ed was going no strap.
Because it fell off. This dude don't put one on at the beginning. He, too cumbersome, or I don't know. But he freestyling, freeballing. But he plays like a motherfucker. God. You would not believe how bad he is. And he's got a couple bands, but this band here is Neo.
Okay.
It's got one called Square Cat, too, but check him out. And then something brand new from Light called Circle. And you guys know Light.
Oh, yeah.
And then Nez, huh? Their buddy from the Ireland moved to Hokkaido.
Did we meet him with you at the Tokyo show? Is that who we met?
Irish guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a band he's involved with. He's the one that got me connected to Light.
Right, okay.
Because he had this label, Transduction Records.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy who went to my gigs late 80s, so I've known him a while. He's got involved with a band called Spook of the 13th Lock, and the tune is The Brutal Here and Now, Part 1. And finally, a band you just toured with, Boris, Black Original, which is one of their dance tunes.
Oh,
they play many different kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think this was a gong song. Right? Atsuo brought the gong?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like 3 gigs in or so? How many gigs in?
He broke one, yeah. Then they sampled a gong sound, so when he would hit the gong, it would sample a fake gong. Yeah.
So each night the blend got more and more sample heavy.
Yeah.
And the gong died.
Yeah. I used a gong on the Spielgusher record to hide clams.
Nice.
Clam, you know, like some people laugh loud when they fart?
Yeah.
You didn't hear it. You didn't hear it. You smell it, but you didn't hear it. Okay, back to your story.
Right. So, I kind of don't really remember where we were leaving off, but
we're talking about you not copying records.
Yeah.
You got the amplifier built for you.
I feel like what is kind of important to mention is I'm sort of like, my head is, you know, elsewhere, like a very like daydreamy kind of person, you know, whereas my older brother, who was going through a lot of the same stuff, was very much like, he wants to know the ins and outs of everything. So while I was just like, whatever, blah blah blah, makes noise, he was like, he had,
you mean
like
eating sausage? There could be assholes and lips and shit. Right. You don't care.
Exactly.
Hot dogs,
right? Yeah. But he,
it's all, it doesn't
matter.
What do they call that when they make a slurry.
Slurry.
We have a song called about slurs.
Yeah.
I played?
Yeah.
On the show.
Like, whatever, I'm eating a hot dog, but my brother knows every ingredient.
What I mean is, you don't care how it's put together. He's interested.
Right, he's interested, and he's still like this to this day, but when he's interested in something, he finds all the ins and outs of it and knows every little thing about it. So he was getting Guitar World magazine.
Maybe you want to contrast him.
Probably, yeah.
Or what's the other word? Contrary.
Yeah.
Contrarian.
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato, potato, potato.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So
you want to know that shit?
Yeah.
That doesn't concern
me. Right, exactly. Which is, again, another, like, flaw that I think contributes to how I play and stuff. But, so...
You know, that's how we know 3D. It's the way shadows. And that's how Mr. Escher could fool you with his graphics. He puts the shadows in the wrong places.
Hmm.
He's got stairs that go up and down.
Yeah.
You need contrast.
Right.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You weren't doing anything wrong.
Right. So so a big thing was he always had like Guitar World magazines. And I would flip through them every once in a while. And I remember one time
That's Guitar World, not Bass World.
Well, but Guitar World still, you know, they would throw some bass player bones in there every once in a while. But,
I did a spiel with them, for them with Les.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Maybe around this time.
Yeah.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
You may have been flipping through that.
You might have been flipping.
Probably.
Or maybe wiping, you know, taking care of business after
done. I was never a reader while I was doing that. Oh. I don't like to hang out.
Yeah, they say it's bad to do that.
Yeah, legs fall asleep and stuff. Anyways.
So you're on this mission just to be kind of familiar, but not that much.
Right, and so this is funny. I'm sure this pissed a lot of, like, Guitar World subscribers off, but there was, like, a spread about the Sex Pistols. You know, Sex Pistols are not, you know, if you're a shredder, you're not, like, really caring about them. But I remember just flipping to this picture of Sid,
yeah.
And he's just gnarly looking, yeah. and it said something about how he couldn't even play, but there he was, and to me that was, like, the coolest thing, because I was like, I can't play, you know? And I was like, damn, this is cool. So that's where I started to find out about punk music.
Punk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
Your gateway to punk was Guitar World and Mr. Sid.
Yeah, and then getting Nevermind the Bollocks.
By the way, Viv, one of her old friends was him.
Mm.
His name was John, I think. That's his.
It was, yeah.
And they made a band.
All of Johnny Lydon's friends are named John.
No, but Viv, the lady on the guitar.
Yeah.
From the Slits.
Mm-hmm.
They made a band very early.
So I got the Nevermind the Bollocks tape, and that was like, that made everything else that I was into seem polished. Yeah. Even like Nirvana, you know, because Nirvana had hit by that point, and I was in Nirvana, but Nirvana might as well have been Guns N' Roses.
Oh, you didn't make a connection between Nirvana and Sex Pistols.
Right, I didn't make that connection. It was
because Kurt would have probably told you, you know, I like that band.
Right, exactly. But to me, you know, at that point, what I was about to say is Nirvana might as well have just been Guns N' Roses. It was like the commercial, popular on MTV. When Smells Like Teen Spirit came out, they played that song on the rap radio station. It was so popular.
Okay.
I remember. Because that was, I guess, another big thing I would do was I would dub songs off the radio and make tapes.
Okay.
So
it was hard to hear punk on the radio then.
Yeah.
So
no,
you
I mean,
must be on
would
a...
have been what came...
You're probably on a quest to find punk music.
Yeah, no, it was... to yeah.
So you're looking for punk
point,
people at school, right?
At this point, punks were like bad guys in movies. You
right,
know
right.
I mean? Like,
on TV
like,
shows, so CPO Sharky and Quincy.
Yeah, it was
in
like,
fact, Quincy Punk used to be a word for somebody who learned about punk from that fucking episode where the dude took some downs and stabbed somebody in a pogo.
That's funny. So
you guys don't know about that. That's 80s probably. And yeah, and so they would use this term for Quincy Punk. Maybe you were kind of a poser or a fan
right,
of Johnny
okay.
Come Lately.
Yeah, yeah. So
Quincy Punk.
Quincy Punk.
I like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was this, like...
Quincy was like a coroner. They had a TV show that was
about
a
like
coroner.
Yeah, it was like a medical thing, right? Yeah.
Well, it investigates dead people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
it was Jack Klugman.
So, yeah, so the introduction to Sex Pistols was that this was, like, this dangerous, like, thing. Even though it wasn't new, it was new to me.
It knew to you.
Yeah, Quincy Punk, you know?
That was something you once said. The only thing new is you. Finding out about it.
Yeah, I like that. So, so when I got that, that tape, it was like the most raw thing.
So you want to go and find out about punk? You want to meet punks?
Yeah, that was it. That's like, oh, this is what.
So
I
you
want.
Gravitate
I
to them in school.
I'm not playing. Well, I, you know, again, I was going. You're to school
still
in the sticks. They didn't
right.
exist.
And there's no.
No.
Oh, not either the school.
No.
Wow.
Okay. So like, I was done with Little League and all that. Like, this was what I wanted to do now, you know? And so my brother and I had started a band, and...
Wow.
I mean, I was just there because, you know, he had nobody else to play bass, and
he's a drummer.
A guy that was also in the... At this point, I'm still in junior high, the junior high band, who... The thing with the percussion section in the junior high band was...
Oh, he's one of those guys.
I can hide behind playing, like, bass drum or something, because it's not, you know, it's not that accurate. Or, like, I played timpani a lot, because it's, like, kind of lower register. I never played the snare, because if you fucked up the snare, everybody knew it, you know? So the thinking was like the guy that plays
snare. Sort of like the hot dog and sausage.
The guy that plays snare has to be somewhat good, and so this guy was.
But you bring him in to play.
Yeah, he had a full drum set.
He could play snare drum.
Yeah, and his dad like was really, you know, into. His dad was a big Cream fan and would talk to us about Cream and stuff. So
Ginger Baker.
Yeah. So he was.
So now your brother, is he writing his own songs?
No. Well, yeah. It's really hard for me to even remember when we cobbled together this band. There were four of us. How we even did stuff. I'm sure we started playing covers, but it's like, who knows what those even sounded like.
But he showed you. You didn't learn them off the record?
No, I would learn by ear, but I was probably playing them wrong. But yeah. Nobody told me, like, oh, that's wrong or it doesn't do this. I thought it was right, and nobody... Maybe it was right, but nobody said. And it was like, God, I'm even trying to think of the covers that we would do. I'm having a really hard time figuring it out, because nobody else liked punk. I was like, you know, the one in the band.
Your older brother didn't like it.
No, not so much. He didn't dislike it. He was very open. I'm trying to think of what he was really into at this point. I think he was really going through like a U2 REM thing at this point.
Ooh. How long does this go on?
This goes on until
high school.
I'm in high school, yeah. Like maybe a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
And I remember wanting to start to do stuff different, and by this point...
Well, you're meeting new people in high school.
I'm meeting new people. At this point, I'm into Minor Threat, and, like, the other guitar player in the band is really into metal. Like, he's every day a Metallica or a Pantera shirt, and, like, that stuff was cool to me, but I wanted him to get into punk, too, and I was like, you would probably really like Minor Threat, because it's fast and it's loud, and just like Pantera's fast and loud, like you'd probably be in Minor Threat. And he was like so close-minded about all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other guys...
It's very easy to believe. You wouldn't imagine the older days. That was like 99% of the people.
Yeah. So...
fucked up.
Yeah.
It's really amazing how open-minded people got about punk. I mean, you would not believe the old days.
Oh, yeah. And I'm, so, while they're still doing...
So you won't be doing this, so you gravitate to another...
Yeah, exactly. And it was basically like half and half. At this point, my brother was dating a French exchange student that was all about Sonic Youth and, like, My Bloody Valentine. So that's, so I started to like that stuff. And this is also around the time that I heard and got into Fugazi and, like... That was super different. You know, even for me thinking like, oh, this is punk, but I'm not closed-minded about it. It's different. It's a different sounding kind of punk. So it just...
Black Flag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that... The stuff that we were doing kind of just became... None of us were on the same page about what we wanted to do. So the band just kind of, like, fizzled. And, you know, again, being up in the hills... Well, it's kind of funny. There was a lot of stuff going on further up the hill in Grass Valley. Like, that's where Legs on Earth, which mutated into Hella, was going on. I wasn't part of that, though. I didn't have transportation.
You probably weren't aware of it.
Even though it was 20 minutes away,
well,
I didn't know any of those people.
Well, this was pre-internet, too, so there's no... Unless,
way of connecting.
Unless you have a driver.
Unless you knew somebody. Oh, you couldn't even get there.
Yeah. And this was... And so I started going to a lot of shows with my brother... because he could drive and I didn't, so we.
Oh, you start going to gigs.
Yes, yeah, so we would drive down to Sacramento to like Bojangles and see
Cattle
shows.
Club.
Yeah, and but it since I didn't drive, there wasn't an outlet for me to really meet other people and start bands with them. But it was through going to these shows that I met Jeff Worms.
Yeah,
I was the first person to in this band to meet Jeff. Because Jeff
is a guitar player, people.
Yeah.
Caramellis.
Jeff was growing up, or Jeff was doing the same thing, you know, I did, unbeknownst to me, at another school that was about 20 minutes up the road. And,
what you need at the club.
Yeah.
You know, we're at the end of the first hour.
Cool.
April 8th, 2012, Watt for Pedro show. Here with the Caramellis guys in Seattle. Hold tight for hour two. April 8, 2012, it's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show. Watt from Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with Long Memory from S. Klain and R. Gangbang. Then we heard Acid Song by Black Bananas. And then Spray Paint by Black Moth Super Rainbow. Here with Nathan. He has met Jeff Worms in his journey of music.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't end up playing with Jeff in this band until later, but that, like, definitely when I met him, he made an impression on me. Like, this guy is the most hyper, like, nuts guy I've ever met. But
and he likes music.
And he likes music. And I wasn't driving, and so there wasn't really a lot of outlet for me to meet other people. So at this point, I was just like, all right, I'm going to figure out this high school thing, get the hell out of high school because I hate high school. Like, I'm just super not into it. And once I'm out and I, like, go to junior college down the hill, that's when I'll meet new people. That's when I'll be able to start a band, you know?
Yeah.
So that happened. I graduated high school and started driving down the hill more, about 40 minutes to go to junior college. And I would go to the record store in Roseville. There's a big record store that always had, you know, they always post, there were always ads of people working for musicians.
Ah.
And so there was a flyer that caught my eye because it was really bizarre. It had nothing to do really with what type of music it was. I wish I still had it, because it was the weirdest, like, looking for people to play music with flyer ever.
This thing called the Recycler.
Yeah.
And it was a free weekly of ads. Selling everything, washing machines, I bought all my cars, all my amps, everything. But they'd also have sections for bands.
Yeah.
And they'd do things like, No Flakes, must have own transportation, must have own equipment.
It wasn't anything like that. It was like, there were probably like weird stickers on it. Have management. And I think they were like, there was probably like a pentagram or an upside down cross on it or something, but it didn't look menacing and metal or anything like that. It was like in, probably done in like pink Sharpie or something. It was just
Hello Kitty.
Yeah, it just really like stuck out. And the name on it, I'll never forget this, the name on it was this guy, Chuck. So I took the thing, and I called
up Chuck.
And I called up Chuck, and I left a message saying, "Hey, this message for Chuck. My name's Nathan. I blah 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 whatever." I left a message, and I got a call back later, and I think I remember saying like, "Oh, is this Chuck?" And the guy's like, "Well, yeah, but Chuck's not my real name. My name's Nick."
Phew!
Charles is my middle name, and I didn't want to put my real name on the flyer with my phone number.
But I just instantly pictured him playing this Edwards message. Middle.
Name is his first name is really Charles. He's
Chuck.
Chuck.
Yeah. Edward. Yes. Anybody ever call you Chuck?
No.
Okay. Roger that.
Had to think about it. But so I always pictured him like playing this message for his friends because I genuinely thought I was calling a Chuck. You know. When
Yeah.
So. And
you
so
bring your bass over there?
We met up once, probably, just to make sure that we weren't, like, psychos.
At a bookstore,
yeah.
We'd like to check each other out.
I think we met, and then we drove.
I answered an ad once. In West Hollywood.
Yeah.
I drove up there, jammed I Want to Be Your Dog with these people for 3 hours. D-Boom wouldn't make a punk band at first.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a gig, and I go to him, man, we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I don't know. So I went and added to the ad, and after that gig, okay, I'll make a band.
Oh, play the game.
I'm not saying was manipulating D-Boone at all, but
withholding.
I don't know why the punk thing was so intense on me. I wanted to make a band.
Yeah,
I know he did too, but I it was scary for me to answer ad. I didn't check them out in the bookstore. I went right to the pad.
Yeah,
which was a trip. If you knew Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood in those days, there was many people hitchhiking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know about this thing? This is before AIDS.
Yeah, no.
Well, I moved by the address and I had to circle around. I don't mean to bum rush your interview.
No, that's good.
And I just come running up to my car, you know, and they just stand there at the window. Hi. I get out, I get my amp, I get my bass, and then they're just looking at me. And so I go in there, it was the drummies. Pop's electric shop. Mm-hmm. As we were practicing, I go, man, where are these guys going? Why don't they charter a bus? There's hundreds of guys. All hitchhiking. Where are they going? Mm-hmm. Man, those guys are whores. They'll go anywhere you want them. I didn't know. I was 18.
Yikes.
My first introduction to that kind of thing. And I jammed. They were nice people. I did I Want to Be a Dog a long time.
Yeah.
But I never played with them again. So I can understand you want to check each other out in the bookstore.
Yeah, so, and then...
That must have been kind of trippy. Were you, like, looking in different aisles, looking through the books?
Well, no. I think we both had punk t-shirts on, and I had, like, probably funny hair or something.
Yeah.
Oh, so you could know
so
that
So we
one.
Knew, yeah.
And it was... And... I didn't... Dude, I don't know if you remember this, but I didn't even have a cell phone yet. But
I was probably borrowing my mom's cell phone.
So it was like, you were like, oh, I'll be by the magazines. And I remember he was looking, like, the first thing that he did was like, it was like one of those, like, is it Fantagoria magazines or something? Is that a magazine?
The film magazine, yeah.
Yeah, and you, like, first thing was like, check out this picture, and it was like this gnarly, like, bloody something or other. And, yeah.
Yeah, hello.
So then you knew I was okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's all way together.
Yeah, so then we went back to your parents' house, and, like, we just, we talked about, you know, mutual influences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But he gave me a CD of his band, and I took it home.
Yeah.
And I learned the songs, or what I thought was the songs. It was, you know, it wasn't like this stuff. So
I know.
It was pretty straight.
We even talked about his music journey.
So what was funny was when I went and played with him and the drummer, I had learned these songs and where they were on the bass, and we start playing, and it's just like, it's not adding up, and I'm like, what's going on? Did I, like, learn this wrong? Where it looks like we're in the same position. And he was like, oh, I didn't tune when we did that recording. I mean, the guitar was in tune to itself, but I had no idea where it was. And so now he was in proper tuning, but I had learned it where the
recording was. You mean 448?
Yeah. So,
but this was, the recording was not in 440. It was just nothing. I didn't have a tuner.
It was
wherever. It was in tune to itself, but it was in tune to 448.
Yeah. Right.
So that's why.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of cats that would record half step, some singers want a half step down. And
it was nothing like that.
Kiss
it was
records
just like, my guitar is in tune, okay, we're going to record.
Yeah. And you just didn't try to get, okay.
Well,
so after that,
we eventually figured it out, yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. And then he picked up on the story from there with the Taramellos.
Right, exactly. That's
that Jeff Wurns.
Yeah.
The guy I met last night.
Vince.
No, Portland, two nights ago. Vince.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to... It's a great story. I wish I would have learned bass like your journey. But I had to do it my way. Stumbled through it. We're going to hear some music and then...
So we switch seats?
Talk to John. Thank you.
wrote this for someone else. I wrote this for someone in a dream about dream things and candy. So well, well, when our hair is white, so white, that neither of us bothers to dye it anymore. And sex, whatever that was, is not the main agenda. I will still kiss your pretty nose in the middle of the day, in the middle of the night, in the middle of a dream.
Lays the air and delivers string speak into my auditorium, mercifully filtered through the dung preachers of Minus Vast Overlord. Gimme, oh, violent ones, the bulk of thy painful meaning, we cry. But what comes through are only unpopped kernels, most white and bored. Sticky yellowed clouds lowered onto our outstretched, pocked tongues, bespeckled with papillae eager for the acrid thrill of black lemons and aluminium. Poorly they mark our mouth with taste, yet merely poison the weak, the young. As dribbled scribbles languish from dolorant pens, we must ask, why come? Chopped and blown are our ready upturned faces, seeking to espy that chance of plastic disease, that disingenuous, distinguished circus cake. For we've learned to beg and slaver, such as piteous miscreants. Oh, my eye! It drips the sight released like discharge from a magician's mandrake. Yes, from Karnak, through Carthage, to Cartagena, our muse must rise and quake, from the foundation to the firmament. We'll wriggle a spent worm sheath, and slough the viscous casing of history in denial of knowing about any fate. Or we'll bog down in the tube, fill our last breath with mud, sigh, and break underneath. Never more can be driven a deaf thought from clever muscular devices. Good night, Don. Good morning, Don.
Walk from Pedro Show. We just heard Doe Dune of the Happiness Massacre by Chris Kroger, cat from Austin. What You Laugh At by The Bugs, I think a Portland band. Spiel Gusher, which is Miss Jimmy, Richard Meltzer, myself. Richard Meltzer saw you guys. And then we start off with Dose doing Om Om Om. And now John, the Terramolos drummer, we're going to talk about his musical journey. What's the first music you remember hearing?
My family went on a lot of road trips when I was a kid, and so my dad would just play these mixtapes that he'd made, and so it was the stuff that I heard that I liked was Jimi Hendrix and Deep Purple.
How
and
old?
Let's, oh, you know,
no,
4 years old, right. four years old probably.
4 years
four
old.
Four or five. Really young.
I can't remember. Oh, shit.
So I was hearing that and like Whitesnake and stuff, because he liked some of that stuff too.
Hold your pop.
My dad is 56.
I asked the impossible question. 56.
Yeah.
2 years older.
57. Than me. He's born in 55, so.
I'm born 57.
This guy okay. Your son. How does that make you feel?
Yeah. It's a reality. It's just interesting. No, because I'm placing where it is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In the timeline, and mm-hmm. why Whitesnake and all this.
Sure, sure.
Because, like, if you talked about my life, my pop don't know who the fuck Whitesnake was or anything. He did.
Yeah. No, my dad
knew about,
like,
Bob Dylan.
Hendrix was the first, like, artist my dad heard when he was, like, 13 that was like, whoa, this is for me, because yeah. his parents listened to Glenn Miller and stuff, but he saw Hendrix in concert and all that, so, like,
it's
I
kind
was,
of from my era.
Yeah, very, very similar year, for yeah. sure.
So, your 4 or 5 year listener, it's interesting, both you guys with cassette tapes.
Yep, dub tapes.
Cassettes were big with me. There's a room at my pad where I got racks, hundreds, when we used to tour, cassette players.
Yeah.
You know? So we had hundreds of cassettes that I never listened to anymore, mm-hmm. but it was a big part. And this idea you could make your own.
Yeah, that was a big thing. After I was like, oh, I like this song enough times, he made me a tape. It was like my favorite songs that I heard. So it was like Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin and Highway Star by Deep Purple and Iron Man by Black Sabbath.
He's a rock and roller.
Yeah, yeah. So I was really fortunate. Like, I was born into a pretty musical family because my dad's a guitar player.
And he's a player, okay.
He's a really, really good, like, classic rock guitar player. And
is he in bands?
Always cover bands, yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
that, hence, like, Whitesnake and things like that, too, because they would have to play, like, kind of current stuff.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So, but,
So, you're listening to this music.
Mm-hmm.
How does this connect with you getting into making music?
Well,
did you go back that far? Were you on the drums way back then?
No, that's the thing. I mean, like, my dad was a guitar collector for a long time, so there was a room in the house that was just music equipment. But when I was a kid, I wasn't really allowed to go in there.
Yeah.
Save for, like, every now and then. Yeah, I had to be really careful. And, you know, we would go to, like, Guitar Center on the weekends. I didn't like it because you can't run around Guitar Center when you're a little kid, so that's not fun, right?
Fuck, man.
But, so, then, like, when I was, like, 8 or 9, I became really obsessed with the Beatles. Like, obsessed. And I remember, like, you know, Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour were some of the first, like, tapes that I got from the store besides, like, children's 45s. And things like that.
Yeah.
And then I remember in like 4th and 5th grade, I had a clock radio, and I would set it for an hour before I had to be up for school and just lay there listening to the oldies radio.
Wow.
Just to listen to it. I was just getting pumped on it. All this old stuff. And then when I was like towards the end of 5th grade, maybe 6th, there was like a bad kid that came to my school from like, you know, he got kicked out of his public school. Yeah, and he really liked Nirvana, and so that was, I started checking out Nirvana from
that. Oh, he turned you on to this.
He turned me on to
Nirvana. You gravitated to the rough kid, the troubled kid.
Yeah, yeah, he was more interesting than the guys that just played magic cards or whatever, you know, like Magic the Gathering stuff.
Sure.
He was more interesting than that, and he dressed cooler than them, so I was like, oh, okay. So I got really, really into Nirvana from that. And then that was around the time, between that and, like, Beatles stuff, it's like, yeah, I want to play guitar. So I got to
get... Bobby guitarist. What are you, 13?
No, I was 11, 11. And I got a guitar for Christmas that year. And so I played it not too well. I just learned Nirvana songs and Beatles songs and things like
your
that.
Your pop could play. Did he show you stuff?
Yeah, but only if I asked him. He was really cool about, he wasn't like, you need to take lessons, you need to learn this. It was, if I asked him how to play something, he would show me. But never, I was left to do.
Now, what do you think of this music that you were listening to?
Didn't really like Nirvana too much, because they were, you know, he would hear it and like, oh, that's, you know, that's not.
What's
that
cheesy?
Solo's out of
it's
key.
Or oh, it's out of key.
Different stuff like that.
Wrong
you
notes.
Know what I mean? And like that they were in, you know, like parents just looked at Cobain as like this drug guy that killed himself. And so they you know,
was,
probably a little worried
he was
about
dead
that.
By this time.
I think so. By that, because, when I was 11, that would have been 95. So Kurt was gone by that time. Yes. But so there was a little, he wasn't like censoring it, but, you know, just like, oh, you know, you got to watch out. That stuff, yeah. And so...
Jimmy died?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't commit suicide, yeah. Okay.
No, he just, yeah, exactly. But, so there was, you know, there was the music room, and there was a drum kit in the music room.
Really?
Because my dad's cover band would practice there sometimes, and he was friends with another cover band in Dallas-Fort Worth. They would practice there sometimes. And so when I got old enough, I would go watch them practice sometimes, too. And I remember, like, them playing Breaking the Law by Judas Priest, and that section in the middle where it stops, like, like, the guitar, or the bass, and drums hitting. I was like, that's really cool. Like, they're hitting together, and the guitar is different. Like, playing in a band's probably really cool. So anyway,
there's a little music drama.
Yeah, like seeing that, like, oh, that, you know, the way things work, like seeing guys play it in the room. That was the whole thing with that.
As opposed to just hearing it off the tapes
or off
oldies radio.
Seeing it,
you're seeing it happening. You're probably feeling it, pressing on your face.
It was loud and plugging your ears and stuff.
Same thing with me.
Yeah,
big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other big difference was arena club.
Yeah.
Man, the sound in a club was nothing like an arena. I never was hit in the face in the arena. It was far away and little.
Yeah.
And this thing there. Club, man, it was on me. I was swimming in it.
My first concert was when I was 6 years old. It was Eric Johnson, the guitar shredder guy from Austin.
Yeah, blues cat.
Yeah, so, you know, my dad took the whole family to that, and that was it, the Bronco Bowl, this place that used to be in Dallas, and, you know, we were really far away, and they looked really small and stuff, so that didn't really...
I had to do that for years!
Yeah, exactly.
Till Punk came.
First exposure, and then, but, so...
My first gig was T-Rex.
See, I got into T-Rex in later years and like them a lot now, like Electric Warrior.
I still like them, they're...
Yeah.
You know how so you're embarrassed by some old band?
Sure.
I ain't
sure.
embarrassed at all.
Some of those records are really
so you start on the drums because of this thing of watching the prac.
Because he would let me, you know, sit behind the drums for a little bit, you know, if I asked. And then he started letting me do that. I didn't have to ask anymore after a certain point. And then it kind of clicked, like, man, I'm getting better at drums way
faster. Were you letting go of guitar?
I was playing it still, and because I wanted to form a band, you know, I wanted to be, like, the front man, like, thrashy, like, kind of bad punk band, like bad Nirvana band or something.
Yeah.
And so I started playing the drums because I was writing songs and guitar, and I would write drum parts to them, too. And I would try... Dad had, like, a little four-track, so I could lay down drums and then go do guitar over that.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, you know, the drums get easier for me every week. The guitar is not really...
Guitar, drums, but... What about bass? Were you thinking about that?
I have a cousin that's a year younger than me, and so I was trying... His dad plays bass. That's on my mom's side. And I was like, oh, we should start a band, you know? Like,
let's or at least get on the four-track of the other shit.
Yeah. Well, because I ended up switching over to playing guitar left-handed was the other thing, too. I started out right, but I can write with either hand, and so it made more sense. Like, seeing pictures of it, it's like, that makes more sense to me to do it this way. Like, seeing... Hendrix videos and Nirvana videos and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Some of them. Like basketball, switch hitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But you're getting further on the drums quicker than further on the guitar.
A lot quicker.
So you let go of the guitar?
No, I kept on to it for a little while because I wanted to, you know, like I said, like play rhythm guitar in a band. So my cousin,
front. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was aspiration.
The Cobain fantasy, you know.
Yeah, aspiration.
But,
And you in high school yet?
This was,
still junior high?
No, it was freshman year was when I actually, like, got a band going.
So what'd you call it?
Oh, God. I think it was called Slipshod.
Slipshod.
Yeah.
This is like not two together,
my
right?
My first band name.
So no, Slipshod means like not together, right?
Yeah. So but we just thought it sounded cool, too, so.
It's not together, you're just starting.
So my cousin was playing bass, and he had a buddy that played drums in the school band, and so we all played together. And
these are songs you wrote?
Songs we wrote and covers. We'd cover, like, some Weezer, covered Search and Destroy, Stooges songs.
Stooges.
So a lot of the cool music I got into.
You were doing the James Williamson leads.
really, really badly. That was. I think I had Dad pick those.
You got recordings of this? Is it on the four tracks?
There's video of it somewhere. There's video.
I want to hear. You got a flow. I want to play it on my show. You doing Search and Destroy?
I think I have a buddy that's got it on tape somewhere. Yeah, that exists. Somewhere.
You were singing to people. I'm a street walking cheetah
with a heart full of napalm. Absolutely.
You're a runaway.
Well, you know, Raw Power was like a huge album for me. I remember buying that with like Christmas money 1 year. It was a reissue that had just come out.
Ig remixed it really loud.
It like, yeah, that was like 99.
No, I mean really loud. It's insane.
It was insanely loud. Yeah. Like, I remember having that and being so pumped on it, you know. I need somebody.
Because the Bowie version is really strange.
And there was sort of drama with that too, right?
Big drama.
Right.
Of course. Yeah.
But so, the, you know, through Nirvana, I had gotten into the Stooges and Black Flag and the Germs, Sex Pistols.
You guys play Germs songs?
Didn't cover Germs, but I like the Germs.
But you like the music.
I had a 7-inch and a few different things like that. You know, it was just like raw and like cool, and you could tell they're having
fun. Did Slipknot play gigs or more like parties?
People's houses. There was a coffee shop in Bedford near, like, because I grew up in the suburbs of Fort Worth.
Bedford, I think. Georgie, your brother live in Bedford?
No. He lives in Texas.
Yeah. Don't get all Einstein on me now. Georgie, Bedford's a town in between Fort Worth and Dallas. And I think your brother lives there.
I thought you said New Bedford.
Without the GPS. Well, New Bedford just goes... Yeah. No.
No.
I think he lives in.
He lives outside of.
I thought he lived between Fort Worth and Dallas.
I don't know whereabouts. Somewhere outside Fort Worth. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's
it's an area by Bedford.
Yeah.
It's in New Bedford.
No, sorry. I'm learning English. I'm a slow learner, Georgie. Sorry. Anyway, backpack to the thing. You're playing this coffee shop.
Yeah, it was a little coffee shop that you know bands could play, and so. A bunch of my cousin and the drummer's friends would come to see us. And, you know, my first show, I had dyed purple hair and stuff like that. And we probably played Search and Destroy that night, too. I think we almost covered 1969, too.
Wow.
Didn't happen, but...
So you had a wah-wah?
No, I had effects pedals, though, because, you know, like, I would hear...
69's got a lot of wah-wah.
It does have a lot. Williams, that's probably why we didn't do... Part of why we didn't do it. Because I had, like, a flanger and distortion and stuff.
Okay.
Not a wah-wah. But, So,
I mean, how long does this band last?
It was only, honestly, like, 6 or 8 months. Because the other guys went and did their own thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the other members also wanted to be the front man. And so they kind of went and did their own thing, and so I just started playing drums a lot more at this point. And it's funny, though, because...
So you let go of the guitar when Slipknot slips away.
I just really came to grips with, like, man, the drums, like, are becoming way easier. It's kind of more fun, like, ignoring the whole thing, like, oh, I want to, like, you know, do this, like, whatever, like, fantasy kind of deal. Because I grew up, like, there were always Guitar World magazines were always around the house. And so I would read those, and it was cool, because, like...
Like him, Guitar World 2...
Same one
what
that
about
had the
guitar players. What was so popular about Guitar World?
Dad had a bunch of guitar players from the 80s.
Yeah.
But
did they go out of business?
No, they were still around. But Guitar World would have like the Sex Pistols feature and like you know, I remember seeing there was an interview with you where you were sitting on like a garbage can chair.
Like some dude made me a throne made out of garbage cans.
I remember like that issue, and that was when a Ball Hog or Tugboat.
I put it on my balcony.
That's it. Yeah,
I'm wearing
that.
Army clothes with no fucking shoes.
You had bare feet in that picture.
And I have a beard. Yeah, kind of a Fidel.
You're holding
Chico
like
Marx.
Like a Thunderbird or a Firebird bass.
Thunder. The guitars are Firebirds.
Okay.
Basses are Thunderbirds.
It's one of those. You know,
it's
I remember
a blue
that
one.
Issue and stuff. Cause like
I bought that bass because the case it was an Aria Pro case, round case, but
okay.
It said Dee Dee Ramone on it. I thought like, wow. First gig I played with it, I pulled the whole headstock off. It was fucking Bondo. That thing had been cracked. I had to put a graph that covered. 3 or 4 frets.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I did my first stop. I toured with Porno for Pyro with it.
Yeah.
I love that bass. It's just too big for me to play live without my hands all sore, but I record a lot with it. I used it on the Kelly Clarkson album, another Texas pussy.
Yep.
Okay, so you're doing drums now. Now you're going to do another band? Are you going to join a band?
No, that's the thing. It was a long time between that because, I was reading... Guitar World, like, about bands I liked in there, because they would have, like...
When did you start reading Modern Drummer?
I'll every now and then I'll pick it up if I see a name.
No, I'm talking when, then.
It didn't happen.
No,
it just didn't happen. But I liked reading, like, where bands talked about touring, and they would have, like, the Black Flag retrospective, and, like, you know, Dave Grohl in there talking, and I loved reading biographies on bands, you know, I read, like, pretty much any Nirvana biography I could get
Dave
my hands on.
Great drummer.
Yeah, that was when I first got serious about drums. Like around the time Slipshod ended, it was all about Dave Grohl and Mitch Mitchell for me.
Like, those Mitch were my Mitchell.
Two favorites. I used to rent wow. Jimmy Plays Monterey from Blockbuster every week and watch the tape and just trip out on Mitch. You know, like
Mitch, every song amazing. He played, he showed you everything you knew.
Yeah,
I know
yeah.
how to do this. And I know that, how to do that. I know how to do this.
And that was fun, you know.
Like, Ronnie told so me fast. About, get this, just a little story. Mm-hmm. Ron Ashton told me he saw Jimmy, because mm-hmm. a lot of bands would come in through Windsor. The England yeah. bands would come in from, remember Jimmy Goes to England.
Yeah.
Right? So they come in through Canada, and Detroit they played a lot. Mm-hmm. He saw them at a place called the Fifth Dimension in Ann Arbor. Only 100 people. And no one would come up. Ronnie said he was the only one who'd come up the stage. Jimmy's jam. Mitch Mitchell had on one, playing the drums, he's got a bucket here. He's got beers on one side and a bucket here. So he's drinking the beers and puking in the other bucket. Okay. Yeah, the whole gig.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Kind of like a snake eating its tail thing. Like infinity.
Yeah. And so that was...
I thought he was wild. I liked his style. It was so over the top.
He and Ian Paice... from Deep Purple, like, were really big influences with that. Cause they
left-handed?
Yeah, he was. He was a full lefty player. But, like, those roles...
And you never saw that in a rock band, hardly.
Super rare.
Yeah.
But, like, those roles he does in Highway Star...
Yeah.
I was like, that just sounds so amazing. Like, the accents and syncopation.
It's not military.
No. Yeah. It swung really hard. And so that was a big thing for me. Like, I have to learn how to do this. I love the way these roles sound.
Yeah.
I loved how hard Dave Grohl hit, and I learned how to, like, get basic good
snap.
Style from playing that.
He has good snap. His mm-hmm. wrists, you know, he gets a stick off the skin quick.
Yeah. And so
these guys are influences. You're not looking to guitar players influencing you anymore. You're looking at drummers.
Yeah.
You
want to
be a drummer.
It really,
that's your calling.
It really
how
started
old are
to
you?
Speak to me. It was 15.
So you're just starting high school.
That's when it really started to speak to me, the drums, and, like, I love the way this roll sounds, or, like, the way... this goes with a guitar here and different things like that. But nobody, like, I would jam with friends sometimes, but it was hard to get.
Well, then you're in your pop's prac room, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Almost every band I've played in has jammed in there at some point. It's, even Taramellos and stuff, we wrote some songs in that same room.
Wow.
But,
so you're going through high school, you're a drummer. You're telling people at school?
I went to a really, really small school. It was a charter school, so there were 18 in my graduating class.
Wow.
So everybody knew everybody.
There's 971 in mine.
Yeah.
St. Peter High, class 76.
And that's how it was for my cousin that I was in Slipshod with. And so it was all his friends coming to the show because I only knew a few people at school. But, no, nobody else.
Because I told people at school in 10th grade,
yeah,
I'm a bass
like a
player.
Look
at this. I hadn't got a bass yet. Okay, I'm tuned on the 4-string guitar. And this guy saw me in Chuck's Sound of Music. And this is the first time I see a fucking bass. And I'm tripping on this thing. Like, God damn, these strings, you know. And the guy I was foaming on, you know, or badge buffing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, look at this thing. He was in the store, you know. He said, I thought you were, said you were a bass player.
Yeah.
And I said, I am. He goes, well, that's a bass. And I go, I know that. But I did not know that. I fucking couldn't believe it. Like, oh, God. That's when I thought, no wonder there's four strings. I couldn't fucking believe it.
Yeah.
So I was kind of badge buffing a little, and all I did was with G.D. Boone after school, and here I was trying to be all fancy. We're at the end of the second hour, so
sure.
we'll start up again. Very interesting, John. April 8th, 2012, edition of the Watt for Peter Show. Hold tight for hour three. April 8th, 2012. It's the third hour of the Watt for Peter Show. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show. We just heard, well, we start off third hour with some Can. Turtles Have Short Legs. And then You Rip My Feelings Out, something live from television with Dick Hell in the band, 1974. And Pastures New Seasons Turn by the Bent Mustache. I think they're from Amsterdam. I thought that was up your alley. Well, that's all up your alley. As opposed to... Continue with your thing now.
So,
you're in high school, you're playing drums.
Yep. And,
have you joined another band yet?
No, I had some buddies I jammed with twice. It was kind of fun. The guitar player would play a riff, and we'd say, okay, that sounds cool, and we'd hit record on a tape recorder, and then play for 6 or 7 minutes straight, just improvising, just making it up as we went, and we'd stop and listen, okay, that's cool, and it was funny, like, the guy making up lyrics was pretty quick on his feet with that
this
stuff.
This is just like a jam, not
just,
jam band in the
just
genre
just around. But, yeah. We played up at our school once or twice.
Does this band have a name?
It was called the Gigolo Brothers.
Gigolo Brothers.
Yeah. But they didn't want to do that very often. I wanted to practice a lot, and they didn't, so I just started playing the CDs. Because I couldn't, I went to a small school, I didn't know a lot of people that wanted to play as much as I did, so it was mostly playing to, at first, Nirvana.
Like what I
Zeppelin
did, D-Boone.
Yeah, exactly. So I would, when I couldn't play something, I would kind of stop and, just practice that, and then, I could do this differently instead, and...
He's doing it, I could do it different.
I started changing it up. I like playing it this way better, actually. This is more fun for me. And,
So what about your bad taste in bands? Is it changing?
It started to change because I still liked all that stuff, trying to learn the bass drum on Good Times, Bad Times was a really huge thing for me. The fast, those doubles, that's the next thing I've got to learn, is, how to play the bass drum like that. Became pretty...
I think, four... Somebody gave me all the John Bonham drums isolated.
Oh, it's for,
No, it's four. It's got, Black Levy and Black...
See, I haven't heard that. I've heard the one with, Fool in the Rain and,
Well, maybe I'll flow these to you.
All My Love.
It's the drums isolated.
Love to hear it. Yeah, I always trip out.
He's having a drummer.
Hear
okay, so, you're, getting into this thing kind of serious.
Yeah.
This drums thing.
Well, then my cousin played me NoFX one day, and that was the first time I'd heard the really fast double time punk like that. Because I was, at that age, I was snobby about...
Oh, yeah, hardcore.
Yeah, well, I was snobby about, more, modern stuff, because I didn't like Blink-182, and all my cousin's friends thought, oh, that's so punk, and I was like, I like the Germs, and I like Black Flag.
But that's double time. Jeez, that shit's fast.
Some of that was, for sure. But
we do a secret? The end of We Must Bleed?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, I remember listening to that shit, and man, it was... What was really intense was that album came out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the gigs, I couldn't tell what Darby was saying and stuff. Yeah. Mike's over here. And then that album, the words were so fucking intense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he had some really intense stuff going.
Yeah. And the music, too. And especially when they were getting ready to record that, they were practicing that band, man, live. You wouldn't have believed it. That band was fucking tough. And Don Bowles had a double time thing that was really intense.
The later Germ stuff live, that was my favorite Germ stuff.
Oh, the white one with the blue circle? Caught My Eye and Tunnel. The stuff for the movie, right?
Yeah.
Lion's Share.
Because that was the thing, Decline of Western Civilization was, a really huge one for me.
I thought they invented their own music. I thought they were just so wild. And I remember, and the scene was so small, right? You could talk, no problem.
Sure.
And I remember asking Pat, who do you really like? Were you influenced? Who do you like? And he goes, Queen.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Queen and Bowie.
But in those
stuff.
Days, oh, yeah, I know. I know, but I had enough, being in Pedro, I just thought punk was throw down arena rock. I come from kind of a reactionary movement against the older rock,
mm-hmm.
Because I was already fouled, right?
Yeah.
Already tainted. But it made perfect sense, and, Pat's beautiful, and there's nothing wrong with liking Queen, fuck.
Yeah.
The guy could play, but in those days, it was almost like fucking ideology punk.
Sure.
Yeah. So you got no effects. Yeah, they could play fast.
The whole thing with that was that you could hear the kick drum really, yeah, really well because it was triggered. So that
he's an Eric too, right?
Yeah, yeah, Eric Sandin or Smelly.
Yeah, yeah, because Eric Melvin, buddy of mine. Mm-hmm. Great, great cat. I got to see him in Germany.
You guys did punk rock karaoke. That's together, right? Okay. That's
but he's just a beautiful man. I haven't seen him much, and I got to see him last year at a gig in Germany. And kind of funny band.
Yeah.
Actually, they can fucking play, though. So Hefe, the guy they brought in for the four-piece, man, they all can. Maybe Mike would tell you he's not much, but
I think
they can really play. But Hefe, wow. And Eric, too, is incredible. Mm-hmm. And then Eric, the drumming.
Yeah,
so you got into that.
When I was 16, that was like, you know,
they
toured
a lot, and they were like, they cooked into the skate scene.
And I was skateboarding at that time, too, and so, like, that was a big part of it. That just seemed to go hand in hand. But, like, just hearing the bass drum and, like, that definition, I was like, whoa, you can, like, be playing that double time punk stuff, but, like, the kick drum, like, doing it like that. That was another huge one.
Did you know about the double pedal?
I knew I didn't want to use
it. What about those things?
Yeah. I did. I mean, I liked metal. Like, I liked Slayer and Pantera a whole lot.
Oh, that guy.
Age.
I just got to see him. Lombardo in November. Dose played with him.
Oh, that's awesome.
It wasn't Slayer. It was him with some DJ.
Mm-hmm.
It was so weird.
That's what one of the things I like about Dave Lombardo is he's done a lot of interesting stuff post Slayer.
Mike Patton.
Yeah, exactly. Fantomas.
Fantomas.
And, he's played with DJs. And even
I saw Fantomas with the
Bozio.
Yeah. Turning the music book with the fucking drumstick with the 500 cymbal. Oh yeah. Really nice guy. I talked to him after the gig, and
well, I like Bozio's stuff with Missing Persons and the Zappa stuff.
There's some wave.
Yeah, yeah.
He rocked the wave.
He was doing cool stuff with weird cymbals there. You know.
But you know, I think Zappa wrote him a whole thing. That black.
The black fades and all that. I like Vinny Caliuta more when it comes to Zappa.
Yeah, but when you get it, you haven't heard about that kind of stuff.
No, not yet.
You haven't got into it yet.
No, that wasn't yet. It was still
okay.
Just
you're with the NoFX skate punk.
And so I heard this band in a skate video, and they were called Cigar. And the first thing that jumped out was their bass player. Actually, like, he was sick, like playing like super busy bass lines. And so I like sought them out. Like, this is like
there was a good bass player from Texas punk, Mikey Offender. You remember the Offenders?
Mm-mm.
Yeah,
missed out on them.
Yeah. But anyway, this guy impressed you.
Yeah, and so I started, you know, I put on...
Did you check out Old Punk? Did you get live at Raoul's? And, you know, Dicks are on one side and the big boys on the other?
I had, like, as far as, like, Old Punk stuff, I mean...
No, Texas.
Texas Punk? Yeah. I love Scratch Acid.
Yeah,
that
was
a huge thing for me.
I saw Yao. He was at that England Fest. They're back for gigs.
Yeah, yeah. I missed
him. I think Drummy was in a neck brace.
That seems about right. Yeah. Scratch Acid and early Butthole Surfer stuff. Abortion Technician.
Their first Hollywood gig was with Minutemen. And Big Boys was on it, too. I remember after the gig, Gibby comes up to me and D-Boom with a giant jar of Vaseline. He's going, we're going to have a party. And there was a pad near that club, the Grandia Room. And we got all fucked up.
That was some of the
first... I don't remember the Vaseline that he used, but I remember him showing it to us.
That was some of the first weird gig stuff.
It was like this. Now, radio people, you can't see, but it's like this thing held a gallon.
Huge thing of Vaseline.
No, yeah. That would, you know.
I got Locust Abortion Technician when I was like 16 or 17, and that was like one of the first really, really, really weird records I had.
There was a Dallas band called The Huns. Way back, they're one of the first.
Mm-hmm.
Busy kids. One of the guys was totally into this Leif Erickson guy as a teenager, you know, young idol or something.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Texas punk has always interested me. So what do you do with this on a drum thing? You start chasing down these techniques you're hearing.
Yeah, yeah. And then listening to, you know, live NoFX, and he's doing the double kick in, like, different spots, and, like, on the reggae tunes they were playing and stuff. And so it was like, okay, like, this
and Scott, too, they would do.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, the application of those techniques or whatever, like, in that, it was like, oh, man, that's so cool. You can throw this around wherever, you know? So I really, like, worked really hard learning that stuff.
Well, what about bands?
Honing it. Same thing, just nobody...
Just jamming.
Yeah.
Sometimes they come over, but usually not, so you're playing to the
It's mostly
records.
Just me by myself, records, or just, like...
Okay, when does that change?
Here. Not till I was 17, and...
Almost out of high school.
When it was my cousin that I was in Slipshod with, like, was like, yeah, let's, like, play, like, a in a in a fast punk band now. And so we started doing that, and that was the Trollenberg Terror. And we played at my high school. Yeah, it was from this old movie, The Crawling Eye.
Whoa.
Because I love the Misfits, and you know they always sing about...
They had all kinds of movie old stuff, tunes and horror stuff. Movies.
Yeah, I mean, because that, you know, I really like... I liked Last Caress and Hyper Moments, but then when I heard, like...
Robo plays with Jerry now.
Yeah. And Dezzo. Like, Death Comes Ripping and Earth AD.
You know that? The Robo and Dezzo from Black Flag played with Jerry
as the
Misfits.
The Jerry Fits, as
the Jerry Fits.
Yeah.
But, like, half the gig is Black Flag songs, too, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, trippy.
So all that stuff.
So you make this band. Playing. Who else is in the band?
It's me and my cousin, my friend David, who now does lights at the Granada Theater in Dallas.
To play there once.
Yeah, real nice big venue. Place. Yeah, he's a big fan of yours too. So.
Respect.
But yeah, that was when we started playing, and so Cigar this.
Now,
band,
have you done any recording up to this point?
Just the four track.
Just the four.
Yeah, track. And then Trollenberg Terror recorded because David had like Pro Tools or something, so we.
Well, you got to flow. I want to play this on the show. When you can.
I'll dig some of that up sometime for sure.
How long does this last?
This band, that was the senior year of high school. So.
That's over? Drown?
17, 18. No, we played, we just played at my school and stuff, you know? And then that summer after I graduated, that band Cigar that I checked out, yeah. I'd become friends with them on the internet. Because they weren't really doing much. They kind of put out that record and didn't do much at all. But they were coming through town, and they were like, hey, can you book us a Dallas show?
Yeah.
And your band can play and stuff. I was like, yeah, sure. So that was the first time I played in Deep Ellum down in Dallas. Yeah. And that was huge for me because I'd gone to see tons of shows there and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, when I started going to shows, they were all always down there. Trees, Galaxy Club, Curtain Club.
Clearview.
Deep Ellum Live.
Let's see, Clearwater.
Yeah. All those places, so we finally got to play
Gypsy
there.
Gypsy Tea Room,
Gypsy Ballroom.
Yeah, but Deep Ellum was all... There was a pad, you know about Twilight Zone and AAA Ranch?
Those were a little before...
Yeah, they before were Jack Ruby pads.
Yeah.
You have to load up the fucking equipment in the wooden stairs that were in Roundy, bringing up amps through this shit.
And Sons of Herman Hall down there has got a lot of history to it.
Wow, those were the first places I played in your town. Yeah.
Bar of Soap, that I know Black Flag had played there as a venue, and you could do your laundry there. It's a little laundromat.
Oh, there's a few of those. There's one in Cincinnati called Suds Your Dud. No, Sudsy Malone's. Suds Your Duds is another one. Yeah. So, you set up this gig, you play in Deep Ellum.
Yeah.
This is with the Trollenberg.
Trollenberg Terror and Cigar.
And
that was huge for me. Like, I was so obsessed with them. And their drummer, John Sortland, is from Grass Valley, where Nate's from.
Wow, this is the connection.
This is like
or
one
just
of
the coincidence.
The band Cigar that he's talking about, that was like one of the first shows I went to was I saw that band play.
Because well, it leads to a connection.
One of my dad's younger sister lived in Grass Valley in the 80s because she went to school at Chico State and got married, and her ex-husband, I think, still lives up there and everything. But so I'd always had these weird kind of funny
Chico big party
connections.
School.
Yeah, for
I played
sure.
There a few times.
And so John Sortland from Cigar told me about his old band Circus Tents, which was like a Grass Valley punk band, you know.
Yeah.
So I tracked down their 7-inch online, and he's the one that was like, you got to go back and listen to RKL, this band, Rich Kids on LSD. So you have to get this live album, Double Live in Berlin. It's like the best punk drumming. And so I like found the MP3s of it online and later got the vinyl. But that was like a huge thing because Bomber, their old drummer, and Little Joe, their bass player who now plays in Lagwagon, that was like for late 80s like hardcore punk. It was like man, like that's like the best rhythm section, you know. And so that was another like really huge thing, and that was from John Sortland. From Cigar telling me to check that out. But my car got towed after that show and stuff. Like, it was like a fun night, but it also kind of sucked. But they stayed with me, and it was a lot of fun. Like, wow, like this band's staying at my parents' house. This is crazy. Like, I want to go on tour soon. But
oh, okay.
So Trollenberg Terror broke up after that and joined this other punk band called
Why'd
No
they
Class.
Break up?
The other guys had girlfriends.
Drama.
Yeah. Just the normal kind of thing.
Okay.
So I was in college at this point, and some girl in my dorm that liked metal was like, oh, my friend Chris's band needs a drummer. You should try out for them. So played for this punk band, No Class. It was like,
I thought you said metal.
She was a metal girl. but
the band was punk.
The band was punk, yeah. Like, she and I would hang out and talk about Slayer and stuff, but she kind of dated the guitar player. So I played for them for a while, and then that band just kind of fizzled. I was in a handful of different Denton bands.
What were they called?
No Class.
No Class.
Classic, you know, shitty punk band name. But so then I was in other, I started getting into other stuff around this time. That was, like, when I first heard Hella and Lightning Bolt. And that was the next, like, that made sense to me. This is, like, the next thing, because, like, nobody really wants to play punk anymore that's my age. I still love it, but, like, whoa, this new music, it's really technical, and it has, like, that same kind of spirit to that, but, like, it's different, and this is, like, some of the things that I've heard with Yes or Captain Beefheart through punk, and, so I was listening, listening to that a whole bunch. John French, Strumbo's amazing, like, huge inspiration.
And you know he was the kind of the canonizer of the music.
Yeah, right? He had to, like, Beefheart would
Captain was
everything
a vocal guy, mainly, so or horn or a little piano, but he's the one who
charted out the crazy
for the cats
time signatures and chords and all that. Like, that was another big thing. I started listening to that when I was about 18, probably, like Zappa and Beefheart. But,
and so, you're equating this with, the Hell on the
Lightning
Bolt
and all that.
They're stretching out on a musical thing.
So that's what I was listening to, but nobody in... I was living in Denton, Texas at this point.
The music college.
Yeah.
I played there once.
Just studying psychology.
The Pharaohs played there once.
Oh, no shit.
I think so.
At the Union or in the Lyceum or...
Pharaohs are one of my bands. No, I played in, like, the auditorium. I remember a set list paper had music staff on and shit.
Okay.
I said, can I get some paper for a set list? And they had music staff. He's like...
Yep.
Yeah. And then I played a frat party, I think, or something. There's some kind of festival in Denton where there's an outside festival.
Mm-hmm.
And I played with, went on just before Charlie, the Pixie singer. So I've been in Denton twice.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I lived up there for 5 years, and,
So you're exploring different musics now.
Yeah, that was, you know, I met...
And kind of like smaller, nuanced,
That was around the time I started listening to jazz, too, is because I met guys that were music majors. And,
right, because it's a music school.
Yeah, and they didn't really want to play too much because they wanted to play jazz, but, you know, I remember getting A Love Supreme, and that was a really huge one for me because the Elvin's drumming on that is
just
so
amazing.
That's
the first album I heard, too. That Raymond played it for me.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I was like, fuck. I couldn't believe it.
That was the whole thing, was it wasn't just... You know, like, what he was playing was so far beyond that, and that, like, was a really...
Fuck, one tune, one of the episodes is a drum, starts with a drum solo.
Yeah, I think it's three. Acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
That one, you know, that was a real big mind-blower. And so, same thing, listening to Hella and Lightning Bolt, that, it made sense in that context,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I met Greg, nice guy, the bass man. Like, a regular bass, except for the G string is some, like, guitar string. Mm-hmm.
A banjo string, I think.
Is it a banjo string? That's some little guy.
But so I was listening to that stuff, and that's what I was playing. I was trying to play in that style. I wasn't really playing along with those records, because that was too gnarly, you know?
Yeah,
but, like just playing what I thought, like, were, like, I don't know, made sense to play in that kind of stuff. But I was playing in other bands that didn't sound like that. And so, to kind of skip a lot of...
What are those bands?
Superfluous stuff. What's up?
What kind of bands?
I played in this band called The Skin Trade that was kind of like a T-Rex meets XTC kind of thing. That was the first cool Denton band I was in that, like, played with other cool Denton bands and played at Rubber Gloves and played at house parties and stuff.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun, but, you know, I was still wanting to play this gnarlier stuff. But nobody in Denton at that time...
Was into that.
Was into it or really, like, was interested or could play that kind of stuff. It was really tricky... And then finally met some guys that were also into the Locust and different things like that.
Oh, what's his name? Gabe?
Gabe Serbian, yeah. Amazing drummer. And amazing band.
I got to play with him a couple times.
Oh, no shit?
It was something called Al-Qaeda or something.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't name the fucking man that, but... And they asked me to jam with him. I know. Like, I don't want any trouble with the police. Okay, let's call it Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Jesus. But he was, some of the gigs was in San Diego, and I think two I played with him.
Okay.
I jammed along with that cat.
Because, yeah, I saw the Locust for the first time. It was them and Dillinger Escape Plan at Tree.
That's another monster.
2004, yeah. That was another huge, like, you know, real, it was like the first time I saw Hell and the first time I saw Lightning Bolt. These, like, those four bands, like, it's pretty hard for me to overemphasize, you know, how much impact they had on me. as a musician and everything.
Sure, sure.
But same thing, just nobody I really knew wanted to do that stuff. And then finally I met some guys that wanted to do a Locust-y kind of band. And so it was called It Smells of Sex and Mannequins. Ooh. And I've got that. I've got a box full of those EPs somewhere, so I'll have to send you,
you got a flow.
But that was the first tour I went on. It was 2006.
So you're just getting involved in every musical situation you can. Even though you're like drawn to this thing, that possibility doesn't exist. So in the meantime, I'm still going to do music.
There were finally bands I could play with and like play live shows with in Denton. So I was just doing things that weren't necessarily my thing, but I had enough fun doing just to be playing live.
Where's the Harry and the Potters fit in?
That was way later.
That came
about 2 years later.
It was way later.
It Smells of Sex and Mannequins was like we were all okay. That's it. We're gonna go on tour this summer. We're gonna go up to
your first tour.
Yeah, first tour ever. So it's like we're gonna go up to Sacramento and back. And so you know, my dad
from Denton, Texas, to Sacramento and back.
And back.
That route there. Not a lot of towns on that route.
Yeah, we went straight west and up and then back through like Salt Lake City.
So like Berkeley and.
We didn't even play. We played San Diego. We played this place called
Flags. I'm thinking of I-40. You know, there's Berkeley, there's Flagstaff, and there's Phoenix.
Well, a bunch of the
shows. Or I-8 to San Diego.
It was that we went up. We went out to Abilene first. We showed up at the first show. It was supposed to be at a miniature golf course, and the show was canceled. We're not doing shows here. It's going to be at this roller rink. So we called the roller rink. No, a bunch of kids trashed the place last week. Show's not happening.
Abilene.
So first gig doesn't
happen. Abilene.
Nah, that was on the way back.
Okay.
So then the next show was supposed to be in New Mexico, never got booked. So first two days of tour, don't play at all. And we get to
drive El Paso.
Drive days, exactly. And we, you know, our singer
thought it'd be, so you went to I-10.
Yeah.
Got off I-40.
And our singer thought it'd be good to press new, totally new t-shirts before this tour. So we left with like $50 probably. But, you know, it's not getting you too far, especially when you're just driving the first 2 days, even though you're supposed to be playing. But yeah. We get to El Paso, this place called...
Why you want to go to Sacramento? Because...
Because Hella is from there, and I knew that I was friends with these guys at this point. Okay. And so they had told me, like, where to... Oh, you should play at this place, Fool's Foundation, this art gallery.
Yeah.
And, that, you know, like, a lot of kids still do now. I had this idea that, like, there was, like, cooler things going on in Sacramento than there really were. Because there were, like, a few... Bands
you only had an image. You didn't know the reality of the deal.
You had no idea of the reality of it. And so that was, for me, that was like the, you know, it was kind of the Mecca or whatever.
So you were making the trip to Mecca.
Yeah.
The Hajj.
The Hajj, yeah.
Yeah, the Hajj. Okay.
So we get to this place in El Paso. I think it's called the Rock and Roll
First
Hotel.
Time I played El Paso, you know what the name of the club was?
What was that?
The Coke House. I told the dude, you gotta change the name.
That sounds about right.
It was an old Coca-Cola bottling.
Yeah.
The factory, but you don't call your club the Coke House, especially on a border next to Juarez. You know, see that? Oh man.
Chuco. But I remember we get to a Rock and Roll Hotel or whatever it's called, and there's.
You know who was from there? Rhythm Pigs.
Rhythm Pig?
You don't know them? Mm-hmm. That's old Texas.
Okay. I'm getting
schooled. I'm gonna get you on the old
Texas. Getting
schooled
on the old Texas brand today. But I remember going
to
the bathroom.
He ended up moving to San Francisco. God, I can't remember his name, but he's a great bass player.
A lot of bands did, like DRI and some of the RKL
MDC.
Guys from Houston.
MDC.
They
were called.
Did MDC migrate?
They're Texas, and they were called the Stains, and they heard about our East LA Stains.
Yep.
So we better change
Millions
their name.
Of Dead Cops.
And
that was a huge album for me.
They moved to San Francisco, but they were
the
actually
Vats.
Called the Stains at first.
All
the Vats.
The Vats band. See, I know more about that than I do.
And Dix moved to San Francisco, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was hard to be a punk band in Texas.
Especially in the 80s, yeah.
It was intense. We had a lot of respect. You know, we had problems with the cops, but man, they're seeing, oh man.
Red State.
My heart went out to them, big time.
Yep.
So, what, you finally get to Mecca, Sac Town?
Well, that took a while even, but I remember at the venue in El Paso going to the bathroom, there's a Taramello sticker in the bathroom. This is 2006, and my brother had seen...
Where? On the bucket? Was in the pisser?
It was on, maybe on the paper towel dispenser or the soap thing, or the mirror even, maybe.
So you didn't get to, like, urinate all on it?
No, nothing like that. It was the old T-Rex.
It wasn't one of them little cakes, what do they call it? That
urinal
word
cake.
Is trippy. Yeah, when I say it, and then I think of piss and cake. Cake. There's something wet about cake.
Yeah.
The end is wet.
You can see that.
So I almost want to reach in there and bite the motherfucker.
So I see this Terramello sticker. I'm like, oh, that's that band my brother saw at the house party last year. Yeah, they were from Sacramento or Roseville or something, and he said they did, like, backflips off their amps. But so, you know, I'd heard of them, but hadn't heard their
from
music.
From your brother?
Yeah, my younger brother had seen them.
In Texas?
In Denton.
Denton.
Yep.
At a frat party.
A frat house. And Delta Lodge was closing down.
And we set the fire alarm off because we played so loud.
Wow. So, okay.
So, like, you know.
You saw the sticker, you remember what your bro told you.
Mm-hmm.
And then further gigs, furthers.
So yeah, we get to Sacktown, and we stayed with Spencer from Hella and stuff. And then when, you know, got back home, that band broke up 2 weeks after we got home from the first tour, so it was done.
Wow.
So I was playing in this band Fishboy, and Fishboy would tour some, and then I met the Harry Potter
what,
guys.
Denton?
Yeah, Denton, Texas.
No, they're Denton guys?
Yeah. They're
they're from the music school?
No, you're going to school there, not in the music program. Or anything. No.
What are they like?
It was like if Daniel Johnson, Neutral Milk Hotel, and The Who all like got mashed up into a ball. I'm not saying it's as great as any of those bands, but like as far as like the influences that people would pick out hearing it, those are kind of the prominent ones.
Like
so
a trippy blend.
So I was doing that, and I kind of, you know, was
there recordings?
Yeah, I played a full length with Fishboy.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It was recorded by Matt Pence.
Is that your first album?
That was the first. The Smells of Sex and Mannequins EP was recorded by our friend Brent, who's now, he was touring as Blonde Redhead's tour manager. He did sound for Y for a little bit, but he was trying to start a label back then. And so we did
an EP.
A six song.
This is
EP.
Your first album.
That was the first one that got pressed and had a barcode. And that, you know. So that was a big deal. But you know,
got
like
a box of them, you said.
Probably a couple, because that band broke up long after that. So.
Well, what about this album?
So yeah.
You got a box of them?
No. That one, I only have a couple of the copies of that, but I'll have to send you one.
or put on a cassette or maybe CDR or something.
Some files.
Okay, what happened after that?
So Fishboy was touring. And
So you're touring with this band?
Yeah.
Second tour?
My second tour was right after It Smells of Sex and Mannequins broke up. It was my first Fishboy tour.
I forgot to ask you. This drum set. He had a Radio Shack bass. What kind of drum set did you have?
It was a Pearl Export.
Pearl.
So, beginner, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Beginner one, and you know.
I think of Peter Criss.
I could see that. It's
Pearl,
it was
right?
Stainless steel. Had the stainless steel wrap. It was
still. Me and D-Bill played with a guy named Mike Weiss, who played that stainless steel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it looked pretty cool, and you know, after I put.
What was the name of that band? It was called Starstruck. We only copied records. It was after we saw punk gigs.
Mm-hmm.
He was a friend of ours. We jammed with him when we were 15. And kept jamming.
Mm-hmm.
Tie Your Mother Down. I should make fun of that. But it was really the drummies band. In fact, me and D Boom, we played only one party and one talent show at a park, and he had us play behind him.
Oh, man.
In white boiler suits. Yeah, that's true.
That is a trip.
So how long does Fishboy last?
Well, I was in Fishboy, still going to this day.
No, your tenure.
I was in Fishboy for 3 years. So
and
it
you did one album?
Just one album, yeah. Handful of tours, we played in CMJ, and you know, we would go out, we would usually do like 3 week tours. We'd either go East Coast or West Coast and kind of alternate because, you know, some of the guys were in school or had jobs.
Yeah, sure.
By summer 2007, I graduated from college, and Fishboy wasn't touring as much as I wanted to, and it was hard, but it was just enough where it was hard for me to get a job.
Yeah.
So it was kind of in this weird state of ennui because I wanna. Well, I was just living back with my parents, but you know, I was like, well, I can only do that for so long, and I still want to play gnarly music.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so, I'd met this band, Harry and the Potters, in the meantime. We played with them at Rubber Gloves. They're from Boston.
Boston.
But they asked me.
They were on tour, and you met them.
Yeah. Oh, cool. This was spring 2008. We were on tour. Fishboy was on tour in the East Coast, and Paul from Harry and the Potters asked me if I would do this big 6 week summer tour.
They needed a drummer.
They needed a drummer for it. And
what happened? Their guy left?
They've never had like a stable one. It's always kind of been whoever was around.
That was available for a
and
tour.
You know, they were, when Fishboy played with them, they're like, oh, we love your drumming. Like,
you blew them away with Fishboy tunes.
I guess so.
Or you made an impression.
Made an impression with them, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it was venues
for who?
Fishboy opened for the Potters.
Okay. But, was it the crowd?
Yeah, a lot of it. It was sold out and stuff. So, you know, it was like 200 people there or something.
So, but, good way to make an impression.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I always played really hard and try to play interesting
stuff. So, they asked
stuff.
You, when you, what are you thinking?
Well, Fishboy was supposed to be doing some stuff at that time. I didn't even know, like,
oh, you had to choose between the both bands.
At that time, but in the...
There's so drama.
The Potters tour was, like, the Bowery Ballroom and the Troubadour in L.A. and Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco. Yeah. All these venues I'd, you know, never gotten to play or anything. So it's like, yeah,
Bottom of the Hill is happening.
I'm going to do this instead. So I did the Potters tour.
So after a few years with Fishboy...
Well, I was still a member of Fishboy. I got Fishboy on all the Texas dates on the Potters tour.
Oh, you just said, guys, I can only do so much with you.
I said, I'm sorry, like, I'm going to do this, yeah. Like, you know.
Were they into that?
There was some drama.
Yeah,
over
I can
it,
imagine.
But,
what about some stink eyes, some sour ass?
Some stink eye and stuff, yeah. But, you know, there were, that was just on top of, like, other issues.
Oh, really?
Or whatever.
Oh, okay.
But,
so it had been piling up anyway. So you were thinking about exit strategy?
Yeah, I mean, if I had found the right band anyway, it was going to be exit strategy. You
that's
know what
I mean?
I knew the Potters wasn't that.
No,
like,
no,
that just
came
tour.
Up, though. You didn't plan that, right?
Yeah, so we were...
Or what? At that gig... Well, where is it, the venue in Boston?
No,
the one that
where
you made the impression.
Oh, that was in Denton. At
oh, it was
Love.
In Denton?
Yeah. Like a year before that.
Maybe. Okay. It's a year
it's
before.
It's a convoluted timeline.
So, no. They wait a year to ask you.
Well, they'd had a different drummer for that
yeah,
tour.
Yeah, sure, of
stuff,
course.
But for the big one, because it was the first tour where they weren't playing any libraries at all. Since they think about Harry Potter, so they'd play at libraries, but they would make a bunch of money because it would come from, like, the city's budget and stuff, you know? So it was pretty lucrative, too. But,
That's a weird niche.
It's a very, very interesting niche, yeah.
Trippy.
It's strange, but I was...
Oh, really Harry and the Potter! My sister reads those. She's a teacher, and she wants to know what her students...
Oh, okay. See, I was a big poser, because I'd never read any of those books.
I haven't read them either, then I'm a big poser, too. I don't know.
Quincy
no,
Potters.
You. Yeah, so Quincy Potters. No. What I'm getting at is, you weren't into their, or were you into their plaque? No, you were looking for music, a different way to make a living
just
on music and play these other clubs
and to just travel more,
other
scene, and tour
yeah.
more, and just
right.
Really
so you weren't really into their.
It was fun. Like I knew, like you know, some of it was kind of punk and stuff.
You
so.
Were into the vehicle, not maybe the color or the hubcaps.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, and they were really, really nice guys. I knew I'd have a good time with them on the road.
Clean
and
slate.
And yeah.
You don't
yeah.
have the baggage the Fishboy had turned into.
Yeah,
for like
or
years.
Any you know any of the other like Denton bands that I'd played with and stuff.
Oh, the whole yeah. scene. Yeah, clean slate.
A lot of it. Just that you know,
new water stuff out.
Exactly. Yeah. Guys from a different part of the country.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally different thing, but so on that tour we were cruising through Athens, Georgia, which I'd played a lot because Fishboy is on a label that's based out of there. But I had this buddy, this guy Bryant Williamson. He's in this band called Cinemechanica.
Athens, that's Jeff Mangum.
Yeah,
that's why you said okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a scene I didn't really know of in those days. He sent me that record, man. That's an intense. It's called the Airplane in the Water or
over
something.
The sea,
over the
sea. Over the
sea. Man, that was a trip for me. But we didn't know that. Sometimes scenes go by and I don't even know if they exist.
That one, you know, that record just through word of mouth and stuff, like, really became...
Well, there was a time, John, where I knew every punk band. Like, none of you guys have talked about van scenes, but that's how we knew in the old days. You were talking internet.
Yeah, it's a lot of
and
it's
stuff.
Internet
in the old
stuff.
Days... fan scene, so you could know
oh,
fans, about
yeah.
all the punk bands, and I knew about every record coming out and stuff,
yeah.
but then the scene, you know, it got bigger and bigger, and then I got, you know, my own, I feel like an idiot, I always wanted to know about the scene and stuff, and it really weirded me, that's how I got Raoul, the punk scene started in my own town, and I didn't know it, can you believe that? And then this guy, Vinny Vegas, took me to... There was gigs at houses. Dudes were touring houses. Not even playing a club in a whole tour. And Raul, this guy, Vinny Vegas, takes me to this house in Pedro on 4th Street. I meet him. And I wanted him to be in a band with the guys. I, you know, this is 20 years later from our...
Yeah, from your initial...
Yeah, Minutemen Reactionaries. And that in a way, weird way, they were our grandchildren that we never knew. Mm-hmm. And well, I felt like a fucking idiot. Okay, so you come through Athens.
So I called Bryant to invite him to the show, and he had told me that he was really into Taramellos, like when we were hanging out a few months before that. But he was like, "Oh, I can't come to the show, but hey, that band I was telling you about, Taramellos, they're looking for a drummer. You have to try out. You're perfect for it. It's exactly
now,
what
how
you
long
want
have
to
you
do.
Been with the Potters?
This was like a week or two into that tour.
Yes.
But so I went to the Taramellos' MySpace page and I read the blog entry about what they were looking for in a drummer, and I fit everything except.
So with space place you put the
yeah
recycler that's over the bulletin board
yeah,
with the fucking
programs. That was the way because we
yeah got, yeah no I've heard a lot of this it had changed yeah. Did you sign the thing Chuck?
No,
did you talk to Chuck?
Didn't get to talk to Chuck. No.
Okay, so what happens? You read this thing, you see them what they want.
So I fit everything except living on the West Coast. And so, I listened to the songs they had on there. I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, okay, like I'm gonna email them.
I'm trying.
And so they wanted people to send them, drummers to send them videos of them playing their songs on drums. And I was like, well, I'm on this tour. I can't do that, but here's a video of me and Carson McWhirter doing an improv set together in Sacramento.
Send your video.
Trip.
And so, I put my phone number in there, and I remember we were driving through Louisiana.
You're still on
the
tour.
Still on the Harry and the Potters tour. We were driving to Houston. It was an off day, and I remember, like, seeing that I had a missed call on my phone. It was the 916 number. It's like, they called
me. Were these Harry and Potter guys punkers?
They liked punk. You know, they were really into Black Flag and stuff like that.
They
appreciated
this,
that
this
stuff.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, and they had been in, like, punk bands like that before, too. So that was... Almost any band I've been in, like, that punk was always a common...
Okay.
Foundation and stuff.
You get to Louisiana.
We're driving through it, you know, and I see that I have this missed call and a voicemail from a 916 number. And I kind of... You know, my heart was kind of racing.
It's like... Sacramento. Okay.
I was like, oh, that's got to be one of the Taramellos guys, and so... I check my voicemail and, you know, sure enough, it's, hey John, this is Nick from the band Taramellos, got your email. That's a bad impression of him, but I was like, oh, that's a Northern California accent for sure, just from knowing the Hella guys and stuff, but, so, you know, he's like,
Northern California accent. Yeah, maybe there is.
It's a cadence, kind of.
Okay.
But anyway,
yeah, maybe there is, though.
So he called and said,
too stupid to notice, but I think there is.
Yeah, I think so for sure.
It ain't that SoCal like, hey man.
Yeah, right. It's a little different. But,
yeah, it is.
But you said we got your email and saw your video and just wanted to talk to you about maybe playing some music together. And so before the Dallas show, I called Nick and we talked on the phone for about an hour and hit it
off. The Dallas
Harry
and the Potter show.
Yeah, at the Granada Theater where my buddy that I was in a band with did lights.
Did lights
and stuff. But so I talked to Nick for a while then. Nate called me a few days later, and they decided they were
tag coming. Team.
Yeah, back and forth. They were both sussing me out, you know.
Still pretty much
tag
so,
team.
So
okay, so now it's his turn.
Well, they said they would come see me at the Bottom of the Hill show on that tour.
Yeah.
To meet me and make sure I wasn't a weirdo. Because like, yeah, you aren't really gonna.
Well, it's at the bookstore.
No.
But kind of. Similar. It's Harry and the Potters that play libraries.
Books. It's awesome.
I've seen the thread, the common
good,
thread there.
Good point.
Okay. And fucking Bottom of the Hill and...
Because I told him, like, yeah, I mean, like, I'm in the band Fishboy, and you can pull up some stuff on MySpace and Harry and the Potters.
That's a good pad to see somebody play, though, man, because you're going to hear what they sound like.
Yeah, and
that's great sound at that pad.
I prefaced it with, you're not really going to get, like, an idea of,
oh, because it's saying my music.
My limp, like, what I can do fully.
And how long did you prac with these guys?
With Harry and the Potters?
Yeah.
I flew to Boston for that tour. A week before the show, and we practiced I learned 30 songs in 7 days.
Shit.
They were short songs
just
for the
like
most
some
part.
Like some Whitman stuff.
But
short songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Short. But still, only stuff. A week. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was
pretty good.
Pretty burly, but so they, yeah, they came to.
But so you're
I'm getting
you're
ready
doing
for this
a
in
disclaimer.
My mind. Like,
you're doing a disclaimer, like this isn't my music.
Yeah, and they, you know, they understood that because the video I sent them was like, you know, a noisy improv thing, just me and a guy and Carson McWhirter on a Rhodes.
Yeah.
So they kind of got like, okay, like, yeah, like, that's a better picture of it. But so, we got along, just hung out at the show and stuff. And then I called Nick a few nights later and was like, yeah, you know, I really want to do this. I really want to come try out.
But we ain't doing any covers of Harry and the Potters or
Fish. That was never an issue, luckily. Oh, okay. So.
Well, that was the other funny thing is we drove from Sacramento to San Francisco to watch him play.
Yeah.
It's 100 miles.
Yeah, yeah.
And Harry and the Potters headlined that show. So yeah. We sat through the entire show.
It's really
show.
Late.
Yeah, we hung out with John. Harry and the Potters start to play. And we probably only watched 15 minutes of the set.
I think it was far less.
It was like three songs.
It was three songs, and we were like, wow.
And they were short songs.
They were short songs.
Oh, yeah.
We had an idea that he was a good drummer, but we were like, man, this is like, yeah, this is going to be hard to sit through an entire set of this. It was like catered towards like a very young audience.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For
yeah.
children that read Harry and the Potter. So we're like, this guy.
You know, it's hard for me to imagine. You got to flow me some of this shit. I can't even picture it in my mind.
It was a trip.
Or maybe I'm that stupid. I just can't imagine what the fuck.
It just goes back to.
Is it like Tolkien? Is it like Lord of the Rings? No, I mean, orcs and
it's
Gandalf.
Like goofy.
And, it basically just goes back to like, I was.
Like,
just,
if you know the books, you know what they're singing about.
Yeah, which okay. I didn't really. But it just goes back to I just being from where I was from and wanting to do what I wanted
no,
to do.
No, I understand. I understand.
Find them
not,
and stuff,
I'm not,
so.
You're, look.
It wasn't in my backyard.
Your ethic is not suspect.
No.
I'm just interested how you got into
the
Taramello's band.
Yeah.
But the point was we yeah. only needed to see him play a few
right,
songs
right.
and we knew he was good enough.
Right. And he wasn't a weirdo, right?
Yeah, no.
But in a way you guys want weirdos, right?
Well, no, he was.
The problem with yeah. All your music projects were these guys were too fucking square, right? Right? All
yeah,
these bands were playing
our
it?
Band, our old punk band was just too square for
too
what
square,
we
but doing. These guys he's playing with, he was saying were square too. He wanted to get into the rowdy stuff.
Yeah.
But why let go of the guitar and went to drums? You wanted to get out of the square.
Yeah.
But you didn't want it too weird. Like the guys, what, rape gays?
Yeah, nothing too eccentric.
You didn't want that. Right? Marty Feldman eyes. Well, maybe yeah. Marty Feldman eyes.
Well, the one other interesting thing, not to interrupt your story, John, but this is what
no,
I'm
he's,
gonna, is...
No, he got we, it. He finished his story.
We,
that's how he got
we,
it.
At that point, we had already had another person that we had been practicing with as a drummer.
Yeah.
In San Francisco,
yeah.
We had this guy that we met, and we had asked him after probably a month of playing, like, to be in our band. Will you join Taramello's?
Yeah.
And it was like that afternoon we'd asked him and Nate and I, we posed it to him and said, hey, think about it, mill on it for a little bit and then we'll get back together and hang out.
Yeah.
And then we drove home and Nate and I discussed like, okay, yeah, we're really excited about this and we never heard from him again.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So
I
that
guess,
was convenient.
Well, okay, actually, no, I remember what
right?
it was.
You didn't
I
have to
call him though.
Yeah. So
you
we never heard from this guy.
Yeah, it was convenient so you didn't have to break the bad news.
Yeah. And then there was
so you went by default.
Well, but that was because and Nate and I decided, well, let's go see John play because we don't want to just put all our eggs in this one basket
yeah.
of this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy had this weird psychological warfare about joining the band. So then we never heard. We barely even saw him ever again.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so thankfully it was this weird just fucking
I'm thankful.
Thing that happened.
I'm thankful. Because I love the band you guys.
Oh, of course. Yeah, no.
But funny. You know what? The stories were so interesting, they ate up all the time. So I'm going to have to talk to you again about where the band is
yeah,
now. But I'll
sure.
tell you people out there, they are they got an album worth of basic tracks done. They got to do a Europe tour after these seven gigs with us here. Well, I guess four more left. And then they'll come back and do the singing and lead guitar and finish it. And hopefully I get to play with them doing that material. Because right now they're only doing one of the new songs. But they're playing like, they're on fire. They're smoking. And it's really, John,
thanks
Nathan, Nick, thanks so much for coming aboard and letting the people know about your own personal music stories and then the makings of the Taramello's.
Thank you.
And yeah, it's been the April 8th, 2012 edition of the Watt for Pedro show. Thank you, Steve, for letting me do this from your pad here, you righteous people. Everybody out there, keep your powder dry.